You're listening to Web Talk Radio at webtalkguys.com for now. This is the show for October 9th, 2006. I'm Rob Greenlee and joined again by Dana Greenlee.
Yes, we are actually, we've invaded the studios. We worked through all the cobwebs that have gathered on our equipment.
Right.
It had been a little while, and now we have to go put up the cobwebs again for Halloween.
Yeah, it's been about 5 weeks, I guess, since we've done a show. So something like that, 4 or 5 weeks.
Let's tell them why. Let's tell them a little bit of background. Do you want to do that right now or tease them and tell them?
Well, I don't want to spend a lot of time on this. I think we want to get to the content, but I guess I deserve to know. I'll just say that actually our website at webtalkradio.com was taken down really because it was getting hit with anywhere from 10 to 15,000 comment spams a day, and it was causing a lot of problems with my host provider. And so we had to take it down, and it's being repaired as we speak.
We're still available. I guess if you've listened to this, you may or may not know. Webtalkguys.com has been fine. We don't have a forum on there.
That site's been up since, what?
99,
2000, something like that. So there's a lot of old shows there.
Please forgive, though, the look of antiquatedness.
But our current RSS feed is still live off of webtalkradio.com. So you can still get the show when we publish one through our RSS feed link.
If you subscribe.
If you subscribe, and you can actually get that at a variety of different places. You can get it at webtalkguys.com, or you can get it from Odeo and some of the other podcatchers out there that currently list the show. So, well, let's jump in and cover some of the topics we're going to speak about.
Some of the things we'll talk about is that IE7, the long-awaited IE7, is coming before you know it. And also Firefox 2 beta is about to be released.
And we're also going to talk about a human clock that has been seen online.
Hey, you've heard the rumors. Is Google really going to buy a YouTube for, good grief, $1.6
billion? I know, just for a video playing website. It's amazing. T-Mobile will support Wi-Fi calls.
And searchable audio coming to podcasts at Plugged.
That's Plugged.com, PLUGGD.com. It's a Seattle podcasting aggregator company. And mobile phone podcasting listening gets real with a singular launch. That has a really close connection to me. I've been working on that project. You can reach Dana and I at webtalkradio.com and Dana at webtalkradio.com. Actually, did I say Rob at webtalkradio.com?
No,
I didn't.
Yeah.
No. I was just thinking.
You'll get it, actually, if they do it I or anything.
Well, and, right. And our webtalkradio.com website is going to be back up here real soon. And
but the email still works.
Yes, that's right. And we appreciate you tuning into the show, and we're proud members of the techpodcast.com network. There's a great lineup of tech podcast shows there, and you can also subscribe to the show at the obvious places, iTunes, Odeo.com, and Melodeo.com. You can get access to the archives of shows that we have, and you can get it on your mobile phone through MobileCast.
You know, I know we kind of talked a little bit before we jump into some of the teasers that we talked about for news. We talked a little bit about what's been going on that is not going on as far as our website. But, Rob, what did you do this last few weeks? What have you done the last month since we've heard from you? You actually were down at a conference.
Well, I was down at the Podcast Portable Media Expo down in Ontario, California last weekend, which was, it's the second time that that event was held down in Ontario. And since podcasting is only, about 2.5 years old, it was an interesting conference. I think the podcasting is becoming a little more real, and I think it's becoming a little bit more focused on content too. It seems like we're getting an interesting mix of people that want to produce content, all the way from musicians to technologists and everything in between, essentially. And I think that's the phase that we're coming into here is the content needs to get a little bit more diverse, a little bit more broad. Major media companies are jumping into the mix, which we actually didn't see very many major media companies represented down at the Podcast Expo, which I thought was interesting.
Microsoft not? Or I mean, I don't know if that would be considered.
Well, no, I'm talking about major media companies
ESPN.
like a Fox or an ABC or even a National Public Radio wasn't really represented there either, and they're one of the biggest podcasters. So really that conference has turned into be what I would term kind of like a hobbyist conference.
So a lot of creators. I mean, a lot of regular people.
Yeah, exactly. It's more like people like you and I with this show. We're not associated with a major media company. We're just doing a show that has potential for earning some money through sponsorships. There's a lot of alliances forming with podcast networks.
So was that, who was there maybe? Podcast Networks or as
yeah,
well?
Yeah.
Who had booths?
Well, I think a podcast network would be like a podshow.com. There's the Tech Podcast Network, which is we're a part of. The Podcaster Network, there's Wedding Channel Podcast Network, there's a whole bunch of these groupings that are forming around vertical topic areas. And what they're trying to do is aggregate traffic and to make themselves more appealing to major sponsors, and it seems to be working.
Now, didn't the guy that does the measurements of podcasting, didn't he speak? He's been on our show, Bridge
Ratings?
Ratings.
Yeah, and what was shared at one of the panels there was that over the last 4 months, and this is going back to probably May through like August, the listenership for podcasting was actually slightly declining month over month. But I think you can also draw a connection to kind of the seasonality of listening to audio online too. And we've seen it in our logs over the many years that we've done this show, where we've seen in the summer months or in the spring and summer months, mm-hmm. people are outside, they're doing other things. They're not listening to their computers.
Including us though, you know, yeah. including the creators, not just the listeners.
Yeah,
and that's probably why we also took some time off.
So there's this dip that happened, but what the stats are showing is that listenership is up here in August. And moving into September, there's some optimism that's coming back into the industry around its future and growth.
Name some individuals that others might recognize that you met down there and or podcasts just off the top of your head. I know you, well, notably missing was Adam Curry, right?
Actually, his Podshow team was actually down there, but they didn't sponsor the event. And the other interesting thing is about this event, too, is that there's like three companies that are venture funded, or they're considered to be like fairly significant players in this space. And Melodio is one of them. There's Podshow, Melodio, and PodTech. And none of those major funded companies sponsored the expo.
Ah, well, where did he get his money from? I guess.
Well, there's other smaller companies that are coming in.
You'd think that the ones that had the million plus funding would kick in for visibility.
But I think it's kind of interesting, and I think it's also indicative of kind of what the conference is all about. It's really about helping new people understand how to produce podcasts. And I think that's part of what the show has really turned into, is an educational platform for podcasting consultants.
Yeah, I was going to say, you sort of branded it like Consultant Central. There's a lot of people wondering.
Well, yeah, and I saw a lot of the similar types of thing happen with the search engine marketing industry, too, at the very early days of it, where it was very kind of, very exciting, and there was a lot of people jumping into it trying to do consulting. And so the conference really turned out to be supporting the consultants, and it's basically a venue for consultants to pitch their skills and their knowledge to people coming in trying to learn.
I think you all, I don't know how much you want to talk about this, but I think you also said to me privately, you said it looked a little bit like a land grab as far as trying to start associations.
Oh, yeah. Well,
and you had some thoughts about that weren't necessarily what you'd think.
Well, I think that, you know, a young industry like this, it's easy for them to think that some trade association is going to solve all their problems.
And, like a place where all podcasters could band together, maybe get insurance and
do
something as a group that's stronger than...
And I'm not sure that the industry really needs that right now.
Unionize.
But I think one thing that the industry does need is some standards around how to evaluate the distribution of podcasts so we can be more appealing to advertisers. So we can all use a common metric, essentially, on how to track downloads and how to track the listeners to our podcast, so we can use that data to present to advertisers and hopefully get more sponsors. So, well, we should jump into the topics.
Well, how many people attended? I just want to give some people an idea of the size of it.
Probably about, I don't know, 2,500 people probably.
Okay. That's enough on that.
Yeah.
We were talking about IE7. It's been, a lot of people have the beta. You've been using it, right?
Yeah, actually.
But it hasn't
officially
been released.
Well, I've been using IE7 for probably maybe a year and a half now.
But it's still not officially released.
No, it's not.
And no date yet, but it's just almost, the wave is cresting, right?
Yeah, they've come out with, actually, I started using the IE7 Alpha, which was a couple, about a year and a half ago, and then they came out with the IE 7 Beta 1, mm-hmm. which was actually, I actually couldn't install it on my computer with the actual Beta 1. It was missing some component. So I was stuck using the Alpha for a long time. And then they came out here about a month and a half ago with the IE 7 Beta 2.
And is that available to anyone who wants to try it?
Not right now.
How did you get it?
Well, because of I'm on a program with Microsoft to actually get beta software. So.
And how do you rate it?
I think it's okay. I think it definitely brings Microsoft up to a little bit more of a competitive stance against Firefox, which Firefox is also coming out with a new release as well of their Firefox 2, which they've been at about Firefox 1.5 for, I don't know, a good year now.
What are the major differences in IE7? Tabs? Oh,
well, yeah. Tab browsing, support for RSS feeds. So you'd be able to view, you know, the contents of an RSS feed within the browser. You're going to be able to subscribe to it. The browser will actually auto-detect when there's an RSS feed available on a web page and will give you the option to put it in like a favorites or bookmark list like we have done for years with web pages. So there's a lot of, enhancements to security, and there's some improvement in the speed, and it has a totally different kind of user interface too. You'll notice it when you load it, and I think it's significantly different than the existing IE browser as far as its kind of user interface and design, and if you look at the Firefox browser, and I have not used the release candidate that they just have made available yet, but the Firefox is a little bit more, what I would say, closer to the IE6 browser as far as how it's laid out.
Interesting, because Firefox was the one that started with the tabs. No, was that right? Okay.
Well, I think actually, I don't know if Firefox was
Opera,
first or
maybe.
Opera was
yeah,
the first
that's what
to
I was
actually use
Opera.
Tabs. The great thing about tabs is that eliminates the need to reload multiple versions of a browser, so which chews up a lot of RAM.
How does that really differ from having multiple windows open, though? And you see that in your desk.
Well, it's all within one application. It's not loading like 10 or 5 different versions of the IE browser,
which uses up resources,
which uses up more and more RAM within your computer.
Okay.
Where these tab browsing scenarios all keeps it organized right within the same window, and you can, you can actually save those tabs as a shortcut, so you can actually reload. So you can set your default page in your browser
to have multiple home pages, basically.
In IE7, it'll load as many as you enter into the default window.
So when you have 6 pages that you go to first thing in the morning, it'll just all pop up.
Exactly.
Way cool.
So you don't have to keep reloading all these pages that you use on a regular basis every time you launch the browser.
And it uses less resources because it's one browser open.
One browser open
multiple
with
pages.
Just different views, basically, that are tabbed. So there are certainly a lot of advantages to these new browsers. And there's a lot of, especially with the Firefox browser, this new release candidate that it has. And I would say Firefox is probably a little bit ahead of the IE7 browser, and because it's been ahead for a long time and it's had longer to evolve.
Built-in phishing protection. It automatically warns you when you're in a page that, or when someone's trying to, what does it do? That is cool.
Yeah. It's got a built-in it's got a built-in warning system to protect you from these phishing attacks on web pages, which is like they're like fake pages, and
that's way cool.
That can actually, entice you into entering data into certain fields that can compromise your financial security. So anyway, and then there's also some enhanced search capabilities in the Firefox browser as well. So you'll see improved thing. And then there's also improved tab browsing as well. So you can actually close each tab separately. There's a separate little tab close button, so you can actually click right on that and close each tab, where I think IE7, you have to have it highlighted, then you have to go to the far right of the browser and click clothes in this master like clothes box. So
that would fit in with like what Front Page does when you have multiple pages. Yeah. You have to select each one, then close it.
Yeah.
Painful.
So anyway, there are some little things that the Firefox has done to actually improve it. And they've also improved the whole subscribing to web feeds and being able to pass those web feeds to other reader applications as well. So it wouldn't have to be just within. And then the last thing that Firefox is doing here that's really interesting is built-in spell checker for all of your text that you enter into any web form. So let's say you enter into a form trying to buy something mm-hmm. or a comment within a blog or something like that, the browser will actually do a spell check.
We love that because heaven knows we don't want to look like we're morbidly stupid.
Yeah, that's right. So anyway, you can go get the Firefox 2 release candidate right now at the Firefox website. And I think it's at firefox.com or mozilla.com. And you get that, play around with that. And the IE7 will probably be out, I'm guessing here, probably by the end of the month.
Wow. All right.
For a download. And then what they'll do is, I think they said 2 weeks after it's made available as a download, it'll come to you as part of your auto update process on your Windows.
Oh. Does that mean you potentially, if you just automatically do an auto update,
it'll just show up one day.
You'll get the new browser?
It'll just show up one day.
And you'll be like, what? It looks different? Because you said it has quite a bit of a different look. Okay. Well, you found something interesting on just a fun little website.
Yeah, it's a little tidbit of stuff here. It's a human clock, essentially. This isn't anything all that novel, but it's basically using photographs of human beings that are forming the shape of numbers. And it's just kind of a fun thing.
Oh, so that anytime you look at it, if it's 1 o'clock in the afternoon, you'll see someone standing straight up as a one.
Yeah, exactly. And then if it's a two, there's like three people. There's one on the bottom laying down, and then another one forming the curve up, and then another one on his shoulder forming the upper part of the two. So it's like a countdown clock, essentially. It's like you can put it on your
What it kind of reminds me of, looking at it now, kind of reminds me of those little how-to books, How to Have Sex. You know, all the different sort of ways
all
you
the
can
different positions.
Positions, yeah.
Well, that or the dancing dancers that the Microsoft has for their Windows.
Yeah,
too.
That's
these
true.
Little tiny people.
Except these guys don't. I mean, this is more Karma Sutra than that.
Yeah.
It's at billychasen.com/clock.
Yeah. Next story is about T-Mobile is proposing launching what they call a mixed signal phone, which is what this is you'll be able to have one wireless phone that will enable you to obviously access the T-Mobile wireless network. And then when you walk into your home or into any place like a Starbucks or
a Wi-Fi
or
place
free Wi-Fi network, the phone will automatically detect that there's a Wi-Fi network available. And since the bandwidth that's available to be able to make a connection to your call, and it will transfer seamlessly from what I understand how this is going to work, and it will connect to the Wi-Fi network.
And then how would that help you? That would be so that you wouldn't have to be – you would go to the – if you were internet enabled?
I'm not sure
about – are you making wireless calls if you have something that
– No, I'm not sure that
– How is that?
There's a significant financial benefit, but I don't know if T-Mobile is saying that if you transfer – if that call gets transferred into a Wi-Fi network, that you will not use up your wireless minutes.
Gotcha. Maybe they supply automatically a program that lets you make calls Wi-Fi-like. I mean, you know what I'm saying? It's like right now you have to have...
Well, that's what they're doing here. They're basically enabling you to easily switch between a wireless carrier network and a Wi-Fi network for any call that you make through T-Mobile.
All right.
So when you walk into a T-Mobile hotspot, your phone connects to the Wi-Fi network and continues the call or makes the call. And they didn't disclose what the financial arrangement would be, if it was going to be a significantly less usage of your minutes or whether it was going to be free usage. And I think T-Mobile has a national network of Wi-Fi hotspots through Starbucks and a lot of other places. So this is a way that they can combine both of those networks to make them work together, I think, is really where this is going.
An interesting little statistic came out, too, is that they said that of the T-Mobile subscribers, that about 10%, a little more than 10%, don't actually have actually traditionally wired phones at home. So they're saying if you have a Wi-Fi network at home, you don't have a traditionally wired one, too. I mean, you know, I thought that was interesting. Besides, I mean, I guess it doesn't have any bearing on whether
I'm not really sure.
Wi-Fi, but.
Well, I guess there's an advantage to having a wireless home network. And what they're doing is they're just letting people tap into that when they come into their home.
But it is interesting that more and more people are electing not to go hardwired at home as well, which we still do. But
yeah, well, I think also you might actually find that you have a better quality phone call connection too if you're connecting over a Wi-Fi connection versus the traditional cell phone network. I know I'm currently with Singular, unfortunately, you know, and we're going to talk a little bit more about that later. But I've had an awful time with them dropping calls all the time.
You know, this is kind of related, but talking about Wi-Fi, you have Wi-Fi in your car. We recently bought a Camry Hybrid, which we're very happy with. Oh, it's not a Wi-Fi?
No, I don't have Wi-Fi in the car.
Oh, Bluetooth.
Yeah, it's Bluetooth.
Let's just cut all that out. Okay. Then. Sorry about that.
So...
Let's talk a little bit about this Plugged that you talked about. It's a new way to find podcasts, searching for them. And it's a site called plugged.com.
Yeah, it's a Seattle area site.
Which is where you work in the podcast industry in Seattle. So is your competitors or anything like that?
Well, I would say that they're probably a little bit of a competitor. They're not involved in mobile phone distribution, but they're...
Now, they've just released, I mean, they just started basically. It was recently, they just unveiled their features, right? Recently?
Yes, this being able to search audio on a web page is a new feature for them that they've just released. But they've had their site up at plugged.com, and that's PLUGGD.com. And it's basically a podcast aggregator type. It's a very simple website that allows you to search for podcasts by genre topics and listen to them right on the page, and send them to your friends. And what they've done is they've added the ability to, or they've demoed it on their website. It's not fully deployed yet. The ability to search within the audio through a voice recognition system that uses a kind of a semantic tool to evaluate the context of what's being said in the audio.
That is phenomenal.
But, you know, I have to say it's not deployed yet on their website. There's only a demo there. So you can go to plugged.com and actually watch the demo of this. And it's certainly an intriguing idea, and it's something that isn't necessarily all that new. I mean, I think we've talked about it on this show many times over the last couple of years.
We've talked about it, but has it actually been done?
There's people that have been playing with it. There's a site called Podzinger, which is out there that's been doing kind of contextual search of audio for quite a while now. And I know Yahoo's been doing research on it. You know, I had a researcher from Yahoo on the program, it's probably a year and a half ago, that was talking about all the research that they were doing with voice recognition type technology within audio and video, trying to pull out the meat of it so they can do, you know, what's called kind of like chunked search results of the audio based on the topics. So it basically takes the same analogy of what search engines do with blogs. And basically looks at it by keyword. They're doing the same thing with audio. They're converting the audio into text that can be linked to by keyword. Mm-hmm. So and then what you can do is you can snip it out from the podcast, like maybe 5 seconds or 10 seconds or 30 seconds of that audio that's talking about a particular topic that's got it's heavy loaded with certain keywords that are relevant to what your search request is. And you might be able to link directly to that interview in your blog.
Never mind the whole, you know, the hour show, just that 10 minutes.
Well,
section.
And that's one of the struggles that a lot of people have with getting to relevant information in podcasts is that it's usually you have to listen to so much audio to find what you're looking for. Now, granted, you know, show notes have been around, and that's a big thing in the podcasting area is that people have had like timed show notes. So it'll say like 2 minutes and 50 seconds into the show, 5 minutes, 40 seconds into the show, 6 minutes, 70 into the show. We talk about this topic, and this topic for each kind of like timestamp. So it's kind of the same analogy where you could do that. It's just done automatically instead of it's drudgery to try and take a show like ours and plot it out by the minute, by topic. I mean, it could be done, and it would be a good thing for our listeners if we did, I think. But anyway, we should probably move on. And
well, and I do that a little bit with Boston Legal's podcasts. I publish my show notes, and I tried to, because it was basically my notes from doing the podcast, I didn't actually put timing on many of them, but still as a way to sort of like scan down and know if, oh, that occurs in about the middle of the show.
Yeah.
Well, I think we're heavy loading the show on podcast information. You were kind of talking about...
Well, there's been a lot happening in that here over the last month or so.
At the conference. So you're talking about...
Well, and I'm in that business too.
You're in that business. And speaking of that, Melodeo, it's just M-E-L-O-D-E-O. DEO.com. You have actually been working really, really late and going in really, really early because of the big launch with...
Singular. Well,
so
and
going?
Well, and also in Alltel, which was here more recently. Actually, the last show that we did, we talked about the Alltel release. But since then, we've launched here. It was actually the beginning of last week. We launched with Singular, which is
it's a huge
nation's largest, the United States' largest wireless cell phone carrier.
How many subscribers?
About 57 million.
So now Melodeo
just in the U.S.
an option. Melodeo is where you can look at podcasts to listen to on your phone, available to 57 million people.
Yeah, well,
in the United States.
Actually, what Singular is doing is they're actually, essentially selling our application is what they're doing with a connection to the internet, which you have to have separately. And what we're recommending is an unlimited data plan, which is usually with Singular, it's about $19.95 a month, depending on the kind of device that you have. I mean, if you have like a Trio, or which we don't actually support the Trio right now anyway, but if you have like a PDA device, it can be a little bit more. But
for normal Singular phone,
but for most of the phones that
is unlimited, right?
Yeah, for most of the phones that we support with MobileCast for getting podcasts on your mobile phone, it's just $19.95 a month.
Again, that would include Melodeo, but it also means just unlimited anything you want to do or search, right?
Yeah, you can actually search our database. We've got about 5,000 podcasts in our database right now.
And then all the listening you want, which means you could stream it.
Well, that's what most people do, actually. Yeah. It's about 95% of the people actually just click on a link. Once they search for a particular podcast, it pulls up in the software.
Or browse, right? You can browse.
We do have an onboard catalog that's basically built by myself and in cooperation with Singular. And so we have some good podcasts that are listed right up front so that you can get to very easily. It's basically just a shortcut. There's no downloading of the podcasts when you load the phone. It's just basically a shortcut link to start a stream.
And what's totally so neat about that is that if you are, you know, listening to it as you're commuting and you have a streaming show on and you hit a dead spot or you have to turn it off because of something, you know, have to pay attention to traffic, then you turn it back on, it remembers where you left off. You don't have to like hit pause, save, whatever, or even when you like you hit a dead spot and you lose connection, it remembers and it'll resume when you come
back.
And
then you can also go into our website and actually have your playlist of podcasts that you set up at our website at melodeo.com. So you can go through and select all these podcasts and it'll create a playlist on the page, and that playlist of podcasts will also be, if you get the mobile phone application and you get it, you know, synchronized, it'll actually transfer all those subscriptions over to your mobile phone. So you can actually delete podcast subscriptions on the phone and it will be reflected on the website. You can do it on the website and it'll be reflected on the phone. So you can create this ubiquitous listening experience between the web and the mobile. And then we also just launched video podcasts on the web.
I never saw you this week.
Yeah. So you can get access to watch, you know, the most popular video podcasts out there too on the web. And then, but those aren't available on the mobile phone yet, but that's coming. We're going to support video.
So you started
on the mobile
online
phone.
Only, our website only, you know, and we were driving back from the airport from that conference, the podcasting conference. And the guy from Wired magazine called you a reporter, and he interviewed Rob for about an hour.
Yeah.
And there's a little article at Wired.com.
I don't think it was quite an hour.
Well, I don't know. It was a while.
It probably seemed like an hour when you were sitting across from me talking to the guy.
So
yeah.
Rob's in an article in Wired, at least online at this point.
Yeah. You know, about the whole...
About it.
Well, his whole angle was is that the iTunes and those kind of people are kind of being gone around here with all of the wireless podcasting that's going on. There are other companies other than Melodio that are offering podcasts to the mobile phone or mobile devices, or but most of them actually do primarily downloads, which is, I think it's a little bit ahead of its time. I mean,
because phones don't have that that storage.
They just don't have that kind of memory, and there isn't that kind of bandwidth either.
Although your phone, has what kind of a storage? How much storage?
Well, we do have a phone that's got, it's a Nokia N91 that's got a 4 gig internal hard drive.
Yeah, there are more coming with that.
It's actually Dana's phone, right?
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. Not that I use it.
But, and then the other place that Mobilecast launched on was at a Singapore wireless carrier called M1. We also launched there, and they're a smaller carrier than Singular. They probably just have a couple million subscribers. But, we're expanding this worldwide.
Aren't you? What's the deal with China? Are you guys?
We have a joint venture in China as well that will take us out to probably potentially close to 300 million wireless subscribers here within a few months.
That's a lot of people that have, I was just watching, we were both watching Discovery Channel has a whole wonderful, great called a series that they're starting now, Discovery Atlas China. By the way, narrated by James Spader.
Yeah,
anybody who knows me knows
Boston
that I
legal connection
kind of,
there.
Yeah, but they said there are more people in China than. Oh no, I'm sorry. It's like twice or three times. Well, I don't have my statistics. As many people in China as there are in America and Europe combined. It's like pretty amazing.
Yeah, lots of people. I guess they like to crank out babies over there, don't they?
Well, they had that thing for at least a few years where only one child per family.
Yeah, that's true.
They've done relax some, on that, though.
Some population controls.
Whole there. Generation now are of only children. Interesting.
Wow, that's interesting.
Carrying on their backs now the rest of the population.
Yeah, I also wanted to run through really quickly here. There's some stats that I released on my mobile podcasting blog here in the last, actually yesterday is when I put it out there on Friday, was the top mobile podcasts or the podcasts that people are listening to on the mobile phone, which I think is interesting as a contrast to what the typical most popular podcasts are out there. So I think people have a different, desire for content on the mobile phone than they do typically on in the web. And I think you're going to see this list get some, some coverage next week, essentially, after it really starts getting out there. But
so what are the main top types
of things? The top podcast is actually a comedy podcast. It's the Bubba Bohack's Joke of the Day. It is the number one podcast, most popular podcast.
So I can see that quick
on Mobilecast.
Short,
it's, yeah, it's about
useful.
A minute and a half long.
People want it really topical, fast, good stuff, on their phones because they're walking to the office and they want to be able to be funny.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And number two is an AccuRadio podcast called Top Hits, and what that is basically a 30-minute podcast of live streaming radio of the most popular songs.
Okay, so music.
It's music.
And yep. That makes sense on a cell phone. You're commuting.
So you can listen to the latest top hits. It's like a string of songs all strung together for a 30-minute podcast. Mm-hmm. So when you start, you hear the same song over and over again. So it's a consistent playback experience. And then the third most popular is National Public Radio's All Songs Considered, which is also a music podcast. And the fourth and fifth are both AccuRadio podcasts as well. Classic rock and country music is number five. So people are listening.
So four out of the top five are music. And that's what's popular for podcasts.
Yep. And number six is Foxcast, The Simpsons, which is the long-running cartoon on Fox.
Is that
Fox.
The full episode in audio?
No, it's actually just some highlights from the show itself. And then number seven is a hip-hop rap podcast from IndieFeed. And number eight is Onion Radio News, which is it's like a parody news podcast, like a where they make fun of things and it's fake
the
news.
Onion.
It's a fake news kind of thing. It's a Daily Show kind of comedy news kind of thing. And the first serious news podcast on the list is at the number nine position is CNN News Update.
See, Jon Stewart would be proud. The fake news trumps the serious news.
Exactly. And number 10 is another music podcast called Rap City, and it's basically about rap music. And number 11 is National Public Radio's Hourly News Update. Number 12 is America Comedy Network Daily, which is a daily comedy. It's like a 30-second to 40-minute podcast.
So what I'm saying,
40-second.
To interrupt you, too, is besides music, is these very quick news updates that are also with, like, when you're on a cell phone. I mean, they're updated hourly. So
correct.
You get the latest news immediately on your cell versus, like, if you're downloading something in the morning to listen to throughout the day, you're going to get the stuff that was the news at 7 a.m., not at noon, you know, unless you're home or docked or whatever.
So, I think you're right on that. I think that the vast majority of listeners are interested in music. And I think when you think about it, I mean, you think about Rockstar, and you think about the American Idol, and you think about these music shows on TV that have been linked up with, like, Verizon VCast, or they've been running a lot of TV spots showing people listening to music on their mobile phones. And I think there's been a lot of strong advertising around, driving
That's
people
right.
to listening to music on their mobile phones. And I think it's starting to really get into the consciousness of what people expect on a mobile phone. So I think we're kind of moving that direction too. And I'm speaking of Melodio, of really driving more music through MobileCast as well. Mm-hmm. I think it's going to be an important, as we can see in the numbers, the actual numbers today, that it's a very important genre. So
I'm actually surprised, I won't name any more, but number 18, most popular, is the President's Weekly Radio Address. Well, wow.
That's a parody podcast. That's not the real one.
Oh, well, then that makes far more sense.
Yeah, it's closer in reality to the Onion Radio News. It's basically a guy that pretends like he's the president. He actually sounds pretty close to the president, but he does some pretty wild and wacky things.
Well, frankly, the way it's titled, how would I know that?
Well, yeah, it's got a slightly different title than the real president's, because I also have the real one as well.
It didn't even track on here.
But it's in a different category. It's under the politics and opinion, where this one's under the comedy channel.
Gotcha.
So, one thing that we didn't tease about at the very beginning of the show was that there was some news released. It was a study, and I'm not quite sure who did this study or where the data came from. I'm sure it obviously came from MySpace, but I guess MySpace is kind of graying.
Graying.
It's
the
becoming
graying
a
of MySpace.
Yeah, it's becoming a geriatric community, from what I understand.
Kidding. Not just in years that it's been around, in the subscribers, which was shocked me.
Well, in the users, it's like over 40% of the current users of MySpace are over 35.
So 40%, not half, but I mean, granted, I really thought that it was a teenager thing, but also you read something in Television Week that sort of supported that and even kind of pinpointed it a little more.
Yeah, it said that 86% of the users on MySpace are over the age of 18.
Yeah, so it's not so much the
It's
teenagers.
Not a teen. It's not
86%.
86% are over 18.
Now, I know you have to, what, is it 16? You have to be 16 or something. There's a date,
yeah,
age.
I think it's actually 13,
minimum
age.
When I look, and granted, I have an account, but I just hardly ever go there. I think I last logged in like February, but it seems like it's all teenagers. Mm-hmm. But I have a theory. If that many people are 35 and older, 40% are 35 and older, I think it's because it's not a business network thing. It's a social network.
Yeah.
And I think they're there just to hook up. I think it's either divorced people now looking for a second time around kind of thing. Or
it's a dating service now.
Married people trolling.
It's a free dating service, I think is what it's turned into. But, if you think about it, I've got a MySpace page. I know Dana's got a MySpace page. And there's a bunch of other people I know that are over 35 that have MySpace pages as well. So it's not surprising me, but I talked to my daughter, Carolyn, and she was saying that there isn't a mass exodus of the teens leaving MySpace, but there is some experimentation with Facebook that's going on right now, because Facebook just this past week or the week before opened it up to everybody now. So it isn't just a college community anymore.
Oh, that's interesting.
So I think what they were hoping is that they could tap into this all those teens in mm-hmm. MySpace kind of growing up a little bit and wanting to move into a more, let me say, more advanced community, which I think Facebook is.
You know, as far as a lot of adults going on to MySpace, I just wonder, too, since it seems like all the, you know, your local news has basically been picking up a lot of stories on the scare tactics of MySpace. So I wonder if a lot of parents made accounts. Since, I mean,
just
the last,
to actually keep an
months.
Eye on their on yeah. their youngsters.
And may yeah. I just quickly say, I was yes, I do watch Dr. Phil on occasions, and that TV show, talk show, and Dr. Phil had on a guest recently. A woman is about 35 years old, married, and she was addicted to MySpace. And she didn't have kids or anything, but she set up not only her own account, but multiple fake accounts so that she could basically spy on all her friends and her husband, approach them as other people, and see if they would take the bait, basically. And she got just addicted to creating these alternate personalities and really going overboard. But here's like an adult woman. And so I can see it being used in kind of all kinds of little tricky game things. So just, you know, if you're trolling out there, just be careful who you talk to.
That's true.
But yeah, I can see now that it could be popular with adults. Unfortunately, it doesn't say much for the adults, because I still kind of think MySpace is a little bit of just a juvenile pursuit.
Well, it is, and there's a lot of immature adults out there, too. I mean, I don't spend any time on my profile at MySpace.
I know.
Myself, of course, most responsible working adults don't really have a lot of time to spend.
I know. I have four friends, and they're all family except for, who's it, Bill? Who's everybody's friend? Or
yeah,
what was his
yeah.
name? You know, no. the owner.
Tom, actually.
Tom, okay.
Tom.
See, I don't even know.
Famous Tom.
Yeah.
Yeah. And and I'm looking at some stats that came from the Television Week magazine for October 2nd. And this is a magazine that Dana gets, and I've been really keeping an eye on it a lot lately.
It's fascinating. Anybody want to subscribe or get the newsletter online, Television Week's great.
Yeah, it's got all of the scoop on what's happening in the
industry.
The television industry.
And convergence with web.
Ratings and tracks what the most popular shows are. Well, no, it does talk about what's on
TV.
Well,
yeah, but it's not a consumer kind of thing.
It's not a TV guide by any means. It's just about kind of trends that are happening in the television mm-hmm. business. What's popular? What's going on? And I've noticed a real infusion of coverage of online video. It's really starting to really take over this industry magazine, which really is indicative of, I think, what's happening in Hollywood right now. As all of the major media companies are taking their video online. And they're all realizing that the advertisers are just flocking to to traditional video played off of major media websites.
ABC, can I just say this? ABC announced last week that they are releasing far more video clips, podcasts on their ABC.com site than they have before. And they talked about, I think, the 60% of their online visitors watch the Dancing with the Stars podcast video casts. But that they said they cannot, every single full length episode that they put out online or anything that would be sponsored is sold as soon as it's announced. I mean, they have people just lined up, sponsors lined up to buy sole sponsorship of these episodes and such.
Yeah, and I've also read in here too that there's some hesitation on the part of a lot of the major advertisers to advertise against sites that have what was termed user-generated content. So all the advertisers are gravitated towards the big major media networks.
Not user-generated, which is like YouTube type of thing.
Yeah, YouTube kind of stuff. There's another site called TV Mania that's in here, mm-hmm. which is really, I thought, was very interesting because it basically creates these channels on a web page and then creates like an instant messenger type of activity on the web page itself in conjunction with this media channel. So it's almost like this Buddy TV thing that you've been doing where there's like real-time conversation mm-hmm. at the same time that video's playing.
Mm-hmm.
And it's almost like people that are watching this show, they're capable of doing multitasking where they can talk about it, type about it, and watch it at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's a real interesting phenomenon that's happening with that. And it may be a skill that the younger generation has that you and I just don't have.
Yeah. And since you mentioned it, I will put in another mention of, I haven't said this for a long, long time, BuddyTV.com, which is another Seattle company. It just really officially publicly launched in January. And I used to be a TVJ for them for Boston Legal. But they'll get, it's, you basically, it's set up so you go online while you're watching on your television set or on your computer a television show and then chat with other fans of it. And usually it's moderated by someone who has been on the show. So like the 4400, they have a couple of the stars. Joel Gresh, I think, is one that moderates. Survivor has people from the past for Survivor shows that are actually on the moderating. Rockstar had a bunch of people from season one, Rockstar moderating season two. So, and of course, a lot of the reality shows, Bachelor and all that. So that's actually kind of fun, but I could never quite do it because I'm either watching the show, like they do it for 24. You can't take your eyes off the screen in 24 and chat with people at the same time. But if you're really into that kind of thing, if you can, if you're young, it's kind of fun.
Oh, yeah. That's true.
Get a lot of sort of, it's almost like a director's commentary going along with the show.
And I'm also looking at this TV Week magazine, Television Week magazine, and it's got a couple little stats in here that are interesting. I'll mention them here. The most pirated TV show on peer-to-peer networks right now is a TV show called House.
What do you mean, a TV? That's like the biggest TV show.
I know.
A TV show called House. Sounds like you had nerd. I don't think we've actually watched it.
No, no. I just wouldn't have thought that that would have been the TV
show. That's the most pirated show.
That's the most pirated show for the week ending September 19th. Nearly 784,000 copies were downloaded.
Wow.
That's almost a million copies of this thing downloaded online.
It won its night. It's a Fox show. It won its night, you know, on regular TV ratings, but I guess, you know, it's a lot of people downloaded, obviously. And they're actually going to go on hiatus through the whole World Series time period, like October.
But that's, you know, that's some significant download numbers there. I mean, that's big time stuff.
I bet that'll change now that Battlestar Galactica is ramped up again. Yeah. Season 3 premiered yesterday.
Yep. And then it also has in here, MySpace is the most searched, the word MySpace, not MySpace.com, but the word MySpace is the most searched term online for the past 4 weeks, weeks ending September 23rd. With nearly 1% of all internet searches in like Google. So people are searching for MySpace by using that term. So I'm not quite sure
Why
they're
maybe
they're
doing MySpace that. With a person's name to try and find that person's
No, it's just the word page. MySpace.
Oh.
All one word.
Yeah, there you go with the Google thing and people typing in basically a URL minus with the .com and it's just an easier way to get there. You have to have an extra click in there.
It's kind of interesting. And then 21% are the proportion of people who cite watching video as a primary use for a computer, which is kind of, that's an interesting stat as well.
44%
of 21%.
21%
of people cite watching video as the primary use for their computer.
Okay.
Which means that the computer is becoming more and more a television. Or an on-demand television. Which is an interesting trend when you really start thinking about how we've all perceived that the computer was used with the internet in the past.
And television was worried that people were losing people from the living room to the home office. I don't think so. I think it just they transferred their TV viewing to.
Yeah, I think what you have to realize is that when you use the word video, that's different than television.
Yes, so, exactly.
So that's referring to more of a on-demand video experience.
It could be any video, not produced for television and repurposed on the internet.
It could be user-generated stuff. It could be stuff on their own video camera. It could be stuff from the television networks.
But quite frankly, with the popularity of P2P, I'm
going to ask you a question about that. When was the last time you went to a television network website and watched a TV show?
Oh, like this week.
Did you?
I watched two episodes of Survivor because I can't watch it when I'm watching other things on an opposing channel. Huh. I watch Ugly Betty, so I miss Survivor, so I watch it online.
Wouldn't it be cool if you could designate on their website, like CBS's website or one of the other network stuff that you have access, that you could download through your browser, you could initiate a download that would transfer that download directly to
your television.
To our TiVo unit.
I know. it'd be. They're so freaking out afraid of people would download things without paying for them. But they let you do that, obviously, at iTunes.
Well, they should wrap it in spots.
Yeah.
They should play. They should do more kind of in-content placement of products.
Actually, you know what's interesting is that Comcast Cable, so maybe other cable carriers, Comcast Cable has the on-demand television, you know, through your television. It's not on web. And I noticed that they have, like, CBS has a ton of all their shows, all the CSIs and everything, without commercials on demand.
Huh.
Why would that be?
You can watch Survivor live with commercials. I guess because that people are going to delete it anyway.
Or on demand without commercials.
Yeah. I don't know why they would actually do that. That seems kind of short-sighted. But I guess they're figuring that people are going to fast-forward through the commercials anyway, so why put them in there? Or maybe they just don't have a sponsor for it yet.
Oh, there's a special deal. Yeah, but that goes against what ABC was saying, that they're selling out their online video sponsorship.
Well, that's for streaming off of a webpage.
By the way, what shows are you watching this new fall season?
Jericho, I guess, is one. Heroes is another one.
Those are my two. I really like both of those. How'd you like that head being sawed off, the top of the heads being sawed off in Heroes?
That was pretty wild, I have to admit.
And Jericho, the nuclear bomb.
That was pretty graphic for network television.
It was. Graphic novels. It's based on a graphic novel, sort of an X-Men kind of thing.
Yeah, that's true. And just the traditional shows, Battlestar Galactica starts up this week, so I'm going to get back in the groove with that one again.
It's on the TiVo. And Meerkat Manor.
Meerkat Manor.
They're in season two. Haven't missed a single episode.
Yeah, actually, I think I watched a little bit of it last night.
It was on this morning. It's like I just turned on the TV and it was the Lajali gang.
And everybody doesn't want to hear our TV show preferences.
I don't know.
So,
all right.
It's fun.
We'll wrap it up.
We should. I don't know. Have we been going for, I don't know, how long have we been going?
An hour.
Holy smokes. Okay. I think we've occupied your ears long enough. We appreciate you tuning in the show. We'll be back. Very soon, actually, we're going to be back next week with the show because we're going to have T. David on, who's the host of his own show now called the Cast. And he actually is a blogger for, well, his website is
makesyougohmm.com.
That's HMM. And
how many M's?
Two.
Okay.
So he's going to be in here talking about a little bit of technology stuff. I've noticed in his blog, he's not really covering that heavy of technology stuff anymore. So I'm curious to ask him about that.
He is an amazing man. And I just want to warn you, if you have a cup of coffee and T. David, you might just die.
He might just freak out. He's a pretty fast talker.
Yeah. You're going to love him.
He's a motor mouth.
If you haven't already heard him. Well, listen to some of his pashas.
Yeah, you've heard him on our show before if you followed our show.
One of my favorite guys.
Yeah, he's pretty good. So thanks for listening. And we hope you have a terrific week. And we'll see you around the net.